chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? Where are you? Is it spring where you are? My goodness gracious, it is spring where I am, and I am just full of optimism and happiness and joy because the sun's out again after a long winter of, well, really quite mild temperatures, but very much gray and gloomy. There's been lots of sun lately. The temperatures are warming up. The flowers are in bloom. The cherry trees are all blossoming. And I just walk around up and down the street, just staring up at all the beauty of the flowers and stuff and trying not to walk into things. It's been really, really fun the last couple of days. And I hope you can hear that in my voice. And I hope no matter where you are, if spring is coming, trust me, it'll come. It'll be there. Just hold on for a couple more weeks. If it's already there, enjoy it. And if you're down south and fall is coming, fall's a great season. Don't worry about it. It's nothing better than autumn, let me tell you. So have fun with that as well. Today on the show, I have a really fun talk with Tom Giancola from way over the other side of the continent in Annapolis, Maryland. Tom is a market baker and bakes out of his house, but I'm not going to spoil it too much. But he bakes out of his house, but it's not quite what you think. He's got quite the setup. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes' time. But before we talk to Tom, I should report on a few things. I'm trying to think, what should I report on? Let's talk Bakers for Bakers for just a minute. Last week, we had our monthly baker roundtable call. This one was about building out a new bakery without losing your mind. It was a fun call. There were a lot of folks on the call. Some people I met for the very first time. There was Hamilton, was from Saskatchewan, from up north around Rosthern, and never met him before. And he was on the call. It was fun. There was a fellow named Trevor, who I believe is from Wisconsin, who had a lot of stories to tell about what he was doing and building things out and changing his plans up and doing business planning. Sophie Williams, who's been on the show, was there. She's just opened up the new improved brick and mortar Raven's Breads in Bellingham, Washington, just in the last couple of weeks. So she was able to talk about what she's been going through in the first 2 weeks of having a real live retail bakery to deal with and to flourish within. If you're Sophie, she's flourishing. So that's awesome. So yeah, it was a really good call. And heck, Allie was here from the Faroe Islands, phoned in. It was on the Zoom and was talking a little bit about what he's doing in the Faroes and energy consumption and sort of carbon footprint to his bakery. And that was a pretty interesting conversation too. So lots of good stuff going on these monthly baker roundtable calls. The next one, we still haven't set a topic, but it's coming up already in April 15th. So if you have not joined us on Bakers for Bakers, come on, what are you waiting for? Get over there. There are a lot of fun, these calls. Plus the forums go all month long, day and night. People asking questions, people giving advice, sharing stories. It's a fun place and it's a kind place for professional bakers and bakery owners of all stripes. So come on over. Bakers for Bakers, that's the number four, bakersforbakers.org. It's free to sign up. It's free from a money point of view. It's not really free from a heart and an effort point of view, because you get out of this community what you put in. So if you're in there asking questions and sharing your stories, you get an awful lot out of it. If you go in there thinking there's going to be easy answers and you don't even have to ask a question, well, there's lots of information, but there's nothing beats asking an actual question and sharing an actual story and making connections with the other bakers. That's where all the fun is. So head over to bakersforbakers.org. Would love to see you there. Okay, speaking of Bakers for Bakers, Tom Giancola, the owner of Make of the Bread in Annapolis, Maryland. He is a lovely man. He's also a supporter of Bakers for Bakers. He's a member there. He's a contributor. He's very active on the calls, and he's got some really interesting stories about his time starting up a market bakery out of his house and out of his basement. And we get into it. We have this call at his house over Zoom. It includes a tour of his basement bakery, which, you know, you can listen for yourself, but I'll tell you, the guy built a professional bakery in his basement. Like, it's the real deal. It is. We're talking white walls, good tile, three bowl sinks, stainless steel, wooden benches, walk-in coolers, the whole nine yards. And it's in the guy's basement. It's amazing. He's been doing this for a couple of years now, baking out of his basement, trying things, getting involved in local politics to make things better for cottage bakers. And we talk about all of that coming up right now. So I think you're really going to like this conversation. Tom Giancola, make of the bread. He says if you kind of hold your hands like an Italian, it's make of the bread in Annapolis, Maryland. So I gotta ask right away here. Like, so that sure. Video you sent me,
yeah,
of your bakery, that's in your basement.
It's in the basement.
That's I'll give you a tour. Insane. That I'll is insane.
Hang on.
Oh my god.
We're gonna.
Yeah, let's do it.
So yeah, we're leaving the sanctity of what gives the pretense of an actual professional office, and we are now in my basement. So I'm just gonna go ahead and awkwardly give you the tour, but
wow,
yeah, you kind of walk in. We got obviously drying rack, a little three compartment sink,
a legitimate commercial three bowl sink. Yes,
yeah,
with the spray arm and everything. Holy crow!
Large enough to fit sheet pan, right? Because like that's the key requirement. If you can't fit a sheet pan in it, it's not big enough.
Yeah.
Through the abyss here, we have flop sink for mopping. We have an employee bathroom, hand washing sink, benches for pastry, a speed rack that I didn't quite put away. Don't want to mess. We got a small stack with a 4-pan convection oven, a 10-pan proofer that actually does both dry and wet proofing.
Yeah.
Then we come over to my favorite. I have two decks stacked on top of each other. They're 3 pans wide.
Yeah.
So I comfortably have space for 24 loaves at a shot.
Yes. Yes.
With steam injection and everything, right?
Yeah.
And
then full on proper commercial deck oven with venting and everything.
Absolutely. And then we actually have an electric damper system for our exhaust, so that we can direct the exhaust a little bit more in a controlled manner. So if we are just running the deck, we can just draw air from the deck, and the electronic dampers will control for that. And then if we want to pull for both, we can pull for both just from the convection. And then we kind of come around here. Obviously, need a large baking bench, as one does.
Yeah.
Slicer, good old Herschel. We got this used in like phenomenal shape with brand new blades, and I was like too good to pass up.
Yeah.
Two spiral mixers, one of which, I mean, it's hilarious. We're replacing the little guy. I just put an order in for a 40-kilo, like 40-quart capacity planetary.
Okay.
To replace this one. A divider rounder, which I bought from a baker that was going through some health stuff, and I didn't have the heart to say no.
Right.
Even though like it doesn't fit any of our systems, and I used it once, it made a mess of the product, and I just gave up on it. never have enough bakers left. But buried behind all them is a full floor sheeter.
Yeah.
Arms fold up, arms fold down. We pull all the racks out, the sheeter just fits into the space. We got a nice reversible floor sheeter there. Just a little bit of flour on hand at the moment. We're kind of in between orders.
But yeah, there's like 30, 40 bags there, but yes.
oh yeah, no, like, you know, just a totally irrational amount of flour to find in someone's home. Like it like rounds, like dunnage racks actually round the corner.
Yes.
You know, because that's what they do. And then we built a walk-in. We rigged it out with like that cool bot little sensor thing. But yeah, we have a
So I just want to describe this. I just want to describe this for the folks that are listening, that it's a separate room. It has a, like a walk-in cooler door, like any commercial walk-in cooler. Yep. And then when he goes inside, there's like a home window air conditioner running the cooling in this super insulated room. And then what's that got to be, about 8x10?
It's a 8x8. Yeah. Good. Eye.
8x8. It's, yeah. That's just wild. That's so wild.
So, yeah, I mean, this was not an overnight project. Like,
no.
You
have, in your basement, you have 70% of what we had at Orange Boot Bakery, honest to God. Like,
really?
Like, so I had a 4-deck oven, the same size as your 2 decks, but it was 4 decks, 3 pans across. I didn't have a convection oven. I had a proofer that held a few pans, like about the same size as yours. I would have had more bench space, you know.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. And my sheeter was bigger for no good reason. It's just, that's the one I had. Like, that's what, when you sent me the video, I was just like, I must be misunderstanding something. how high are your ceilings in there? Like, is that like an eight foot ceiling?
So it's a 10 foot ceiling.
Yeah.
The drop.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I'm not a tall guy. I never been, but like we were at 10 feet. No, sorry. We were at 9 feet before the drop ceiling. We only lost about a half a foot with the drop. So we came pretty close to that to the full ceiling height. So it doesn't feel necessarily cramped down there, which is nice.
That's fantastic. Like
your reaction to that video where like, I must be misunderstanding something. Funny enough, I think the county inspectors who had to come out to a review and approve this, every time they came out for like one of their incremental inspections, had the exact same reaction where, you know, they're going down in some guy's basement. They're like, all right, basement renovation, putting in a second kitchen.
Yeah.
Very heavy air quotes on that one. And, you know, they would come down there and be like, what's happening here? just completely disoriented, right? Like, and they're like, what? I'm not following. What's happening? Like, there's a lot of stuff here. This doesn't look like a basement anymore. And, sure enough, 10 months later, we actually pulled it off and got them to finally sign off on all of our permits and close them all out.
Wow. Well, and so we're clearly like meeting in the middle with the conversation, but I'm really curious though, like you're in Annapolis, Maryland.
We're in Annapolis, Maryland.
What got you into this whole thing in the first place to say like, okay, this is, I'm going to get into baking. Like, has this been always your thing?
I blame Netflix. Okay, cool. So we're going to blame Netflix and Michael Pollan.
Oh, the show. Yeah.
So yeah. Right. The episode about air came out, and I just remember sitting there and I had a corporate job. I still do. And I was watching that as home cook, you know, entertain friends, guests, family, all that stuff. And that episode came out and I'm like, I'm going to go make bread. And I went to the kitchen and I pulled out flour and sugar and baking soda and baking powder and salt and eggs and milk and butter and oil. And I had it all in a big pile. I was like, I don't know what bread is. And that sent me down the deepest, darkest rabbit hole that I am pretty sure I haven't found the bottom of, right? Because once you make that first loaf, and it doesn't, and it's not horrible.
Yeah.
You're hooked. Right. And then it's, wait a minute, I can make this without commercial yeast. Whoa. Right.
Yeah.
Then what is sourdough and like, wait, there's different grains taste different ways. And that sent me like down this path of like, I want to make this bread that is super pure and super clean and as authentic to what I thought bread should be. Right. And like, wait, there's grains being grown in Maryland. Cool. Let's try those. There's a guy that has a mill in Maryland. I'm going to make friends with him. And it just sent us down this path. And I'm sure like, you know, you read the forums, like, this is not a unique problem. Like no. I got bit by that bug and it just sent me down this road. And I was just a casual home baker, right? We'd go to a friend's house for dinner. My wife would bring a bottle of wine. I'd make a loaf of bread. I was just that weird guy.
Yeah, that would show
up to someone's dinner party with a random loaf of bread. Most of them that looked like doorstops, right? Like I didn't know what I was doing. I was making like one a week at best, maybe two. And then this, you know, weird thing happened in March of 2020. I don't know if anybody remembers this little thing that went around. Yeah. And so coronavirus happened. We all of a sudden got locked down. And the first weekend, and I cringe when I look back on this, but like, we didn't know. So like we had a Corona party.
Oh no.
Yeah. Right? Cause like we didn't know.
there was
no outbreaks in Maryland. Like we're like, this is great. We all get to work from home for a week. This is going to be awesome. And so like, we, you know, my neighbors came over and like everybody got together and we just made like a big batch of bread. It was horrible. It was like inedible doorstops. But that was like such a rush that the next weekend I did it again just for fun. Right. And it was just me and one of my neighbors came over. And like at this point, we started to like read the news. We're like, uh-oh. Maybe this isn't the best of ideas. So we didn't have everybody over. We just had like one neighbor over because that somehow made it safer in our minds.
Yeah. Back then. Again, we were learning.
March 2020 perspective, very different from what we know now. And so we made all these loaves of bread. We had all these loaves of bread. We didn't know what to do with them. So we just started literally walking around the neighborhood, hanging them on people's doorknobs. We live in a small community. Like, why not? Right. Hang a loaf of bread on their door, ring the doorbell and, you know, wave to them from the street as we did it. And so that went on and we were doing that almost every weekend for a couple weeks. And then there was a bread shortage.
Oh, right. Yeah. Cause everybody was making runs for clear the shelves
the store shelves are bare. People can't get toilet paper. People can't get bread. People are like going raiding the yeast aisle for, and we're making sourdough. So we have flour. We're fine. And so we started doing that and we kept doing it. And then my neighbor started asking for loaves. We're like, yeah, of course we'll bring you bread. You got family, you got kids, you gotta eat. Like you're my neighbor. Of course. And so we did that. And then one of my neighbors made the mistake of slapping a $5 bill in my hand for that bread. And I was like, what's this for? Paying me for bread? Like, that's weird. He's like, people pay for bread. So I'm like, oh, this could be a business. I should think about that. And one thing led to another. We started going, we got accepted at our local farmer's market. Which is, I guess, unique in the sense that it's actually under a covered pavilion.
Oh, nice.
All year round.
Right.
So 52 weeks a year on a Sunday morning, it's open. We got accepted. And in July of 2020, we went to our first market and it was a disaster, like abject disaster. Like I was making breads in like my home oven, right? Like,
right.
Home oven, no fancy bakery, no fancy equipment. I had these clay pots. I think I got off of Breadtopia, like these clay bakers, right? To like help capture the steam. And on the second round of loading them, one of them cracks.
Yep.
But like you could have cut the tension with a knife. It was like, what do we do? What do we do? Like, we had never improvised. We could barely pull off making loaves that remotely resembled something that would be recognized as a food product. And like, now to try to adapt on the fly. And so like, you know, we cobbled our way through this horrible bake. I think we made 26, 28 loaves, like, and it took us like 18 hours to do.
Right.
Just absolutely god-awful experience. Spent all of Saturday night doing this. We go to the market Sunday morning, and like, I'm unloading my truck. I have a table set up. I haven't even like set up my display, and people just start buying them. And
yeah.
I'm like completely confused. So before I even finish unloading the truck and like setting up my table, every loaf I've made has been sold.
Yeah. I was thinking that when you said 28 loaves, I thought, yeah, that's going to be about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Turns out that was about, right. It was something ridiculous like that. And I just was so stunned at the end of it. You know, all my neighbors and my friends and my wife, God bless them. Like they had conspired ahead of time that, you know, if by like 11 o'clock, Tom still has a lot of bread, we'll all go down there. We'll just buy the loaves. Like we'll send like parents down. We'll pay neighbors to get, just so I didn't feel bad. And like, I was sold out in like 15 minutes. Like
yeah.
it was wild. And from there, it just kind of spiraled, and like one thing led to another, right? Like, what's the long pen pull in the process? First, it was, oh my goodness, trying to mix this much dough by hand is miserable. Like, and then it was like, need better ovenry. And then at some point, you know, you've made all these small investments, and my wife and I just kind of looked at it and said, maybe we just make a proper bakery and put it in the basement, because that's the cheapest land we can afford.
Right. Wow. So I was just thinking here. So the Pollen documentary comes out in like 2016.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of like the earliest there. So like, you got 4 years of making bricks, and then then the pandemic hits and you're at the market. And yeah. It's like, how did you get from bricks to not bricks? Was it just reps, or did you get, what else?
A lot of YouTube. There were a couple trips pre-pandemic, to San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Right. And like, I think like anyone that's doing like sourdough and like dabbling with like the higher hydration, you know, you read from the Bible of Chad Robertson, and you read Tartine, and you read Bread and all of his books. And so I have like an entire library of books behind me here, and I would just obsessively read them and watch hours of YouTube videos. And that got me pretty good ish. I want to say ish. definitely still not a confident baker, and I would have no idea why things would work or wouldn't work. But you know what? One day, you know, my wife was like, we should take a vacation. Why don't we go to, we went to Vermont. And I went to a King Arthur baking class.
Okay.
And I did like a 3-day like sourdough intensive. And like, of course, because nothing ever seems to go smoothly in any baking plan that I have in my mind, like I was looking, like this was our big vacation for the year. We're going up there. We drove from Maryland. We had our dogs with us, like it's the middle of winter, you know, like we had all these activities. I had the worst head cold I had had in years. And so like, I'm in this class with, you know, these instructors, and I'm like dosed up on Dayquil and Sudafed, just trying to like consume as much knowledge. Like looking back on my notes in the margins of like what they were giving us, I still couldn't decode what my fever state was trying to describe, with the process. But I think the way we got to a place where we actually can make a decent product now, and I say that humbly. Like I still look at a lot of what other folks are doing out there, and I just am in awe by it. But a product that we're proud of, and that our customers love us for. You know, the easiest way is just make a couple thousand loaves, right?
Right. Like, yeah.
You know, yeah. there's no shortcut to that, I think.
But you got some foundations anyways. Like I was looking back through some old writing of mine, and I was sort of, because I've forgotten myself, right? The piece of the timeline from when did I start, sort of the first time somebody pressed $5 in my hand before I ended up at San Francisco Baking Institute. And, you know, and it was the same thing as, you know, a couple of years. And then I just remember the first morning in San Francisco, sort of like, you know, and the notes from that first morning was like, oh, that's okay. That's how it works. Right. And you get that quantum leap. So it's my plug for some sort of training to complement the repetition for sure. Cause it really does help. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. And if I could do it all again, I would absolutely go back to, you know, King Arthur or go to an SFBI class.
Yeah.
Preferably when not, you know, knocking
up on meds.
Door with head colds and the flu. But yeah, it was so interesting. The things that I remember from that were the way, you know, the instructors held their bench knives.
Okay. Yeah.
They would cut a dough, or the way that they would just handle a dough, right? Where it was, the dough wasn't this sticky tactile thing. And everyone, you know, who, you know, is baking a lot knows, right? Like you see someone that's never handled dough before. I was that guy. And then I saw someone do it. I'm like, oh, you don't need to be afraid of it. You can actually just grab a dough and shape it into a bowl practically in midair. And that's, it's not going to attack you. It's not going to stick to every possible surface on you. And seeing that just kind of, it almost demystified some of what the books don't tell you, right? And just getting to see experienced hands working with dough was this just foundational moment that how they cut dough out of a mixer. Like,
yeah,
that's a thing.
Yeah.
Like there's a technique to this. You don't need to just like be covered in this dough blob for months. Yeah. It's no, wild. Wow.
No, but that's so totally true, right? Like and yeah, the things you learn just from mimicry and so it's good, so it's good to have some good folks to emulate. That's for sure. Yeah.
It's so true. And so we're in this weird position where we now actually have an intern, which is so like full circle in like so many ways, right? Like I'm a guy with no bona fide baking credentials to my name. Right. And I reached out to the community college here. Shout out to Anne Arundel County Community College. I don't know if they have a mascot. I hope they do. go Arundels. That's a thing. And I reached out because they have a baking program. They have it's a follow on from the county vocational program. And they have a culinary arts program. And they actually have like a baking and pastry specialty. And I just reached out and I said, hey, we have this bakery. I know it's going to sound weird. It's in our house, but I promise you it's not as weird as it sounds. Come out, take a look at us, give us a try. If you have any baking students that are looking for internships, we'd love to work with you and try to help develop them. And so we actually have one now. Yeah. We have an intern and he, you know, came to us and had like, he'd made like one loaf. He'd like made like a challah bread and like one thing. And along with our other baker who had worked at like a commercial chain kind of bakery, but actually had a lot of really good experience. Just he's really been able to pick up by watching how either, you know, how she handles the dough, how I handle the dough, how my wife handles the dough. And so like, it's really interesting to see that like you can describe it and you can, you know, receive formal instruction on it as he has in class. And then like, yeah. So let's talk about how to round a boule real quick and like yes. what surface tension on a dough looks like. And, you know, give him a half a day, give him a day, give him a couple of weeks on it. And, you know, he's making nice yeah. looking boules and we're working it through.
But that's the, yeah. So that's the combo right there, eh? Like, yeah. It's the education and the repetition.
Yeah.
Get you going. Well, yeah. Well, and so then from that first farmer's market, like you talked a little bit about, well, okay, we're just going to slowly start adding things on and then make the leap to saying, okay, you know, there's not going to be a rumpus room down there. It's going to be a full production facility. I'm really curious about what made you decide, yeah, this, we're going to do this for real. Cause you said like, you had a decent job and stuff. Like what, how strong was this Kool-Aid? Like that, you know, you could have been a really happy home baker and not left your block. Right.
Yeah. You're so right. And in full disclosure, like there were those nights where I was like, I don't ever want to bake again. This is horrible. Yeah. This, like, I don't know what I'm doing. This is miserable. I've been up for 18 hours straight. The bread looks horrible. I don't know why. Right. And I was like, I should never bake again. But we, you know, we move past. We get past our feelings. We got past that. Mainly because my wife is an incredible person and always talks me off that ledge. But it really just was like this incremental drip of like inspiration. For anyone that's ever had to go to a farmer's market and had to like sell at a farmer's market and not known any of the other vendors, not really know, like I was a customer there.
Yeah.
It's not really the same thing. One of the other vendors was just so kind. And she came up and she's like, hi, I'm Kim. I make jam. So happy you're here. This market needs a bread person. So like, so happy you're here. If you ever have any questions or need anything, just I'm right down there. Just come on by, say hi. And that like simple act of kindness was like, at the end of the market, I went and I was like, can I buy some of your jam? Like bread and jam seems like a combination that should be tried out. I don't know if there's anyone out here who's ever dabbled with jams or jellies on bread, but you know, we might be trademarking that. So anyway, and so we tried her jams and she was making, I think one of the first ones we tried was a blueberry rhubarb, which she called Blue Barb. And it was like nothing I had ever tasted. It was so good. I was like, this is the greatest jam. People need to know about this. And she's like, yeah, it's a pretty good seller for me. You know, I sell, you know, a bunch of jars each month. And I was like, no, like, this is so good. I want to make this into a product. I now want to make pastry.
Right.
And again, like, I could barely manage bread. What, like, where is this bravado coming from that? Like, all of a sudden, like, not only am I going to make bread poorly, but I'm also going to figure out pastry. And so we went home and we started, like, Googling recipes. And we found a recipe for, like, a rough puff pastry dough. And we just like, we took the jam, we put it in the pastry dough, we baked it, and we're like, this is awesome. Like, we need to make like a million of these. And so like a couple weeks after we started making these little jam-filled turnover rough puff pastries. And they were wildly popular. People loved them. And so like, it was those things. Like, it was those small acts of kindness that kind of like hooked us into that community, right? And then it was, oh, the vendor, the farmer that sells eggs, like, yeah, he's a super nice guy. His name is John. Like, he's got this beautiful farm. His chickens actually live outdoors, like, not like in a, you know, like these chicken thing, like chicken coop things where they never get sunlight. Like, they actually like eat grass and bugs and all that good stuff. And like, there's a dairy guy there. He's got these like grass-fed like herd and he like really cares about it. And you start getting to know these stories, and I think there was this almost like, I want to say, Catholic guilt of like, if I stop baking bread now, they don't have a bread guy anymore. And that that's a key staple at a farmer's market, like a healthy one, right? Yeah. You have your produce, you have your meats. Dairy is always awesome if you have one. Eggs. If you have all of those ingredients and you also then have a good baker or two or three, and I think there should be more bakers there, it encourages more traffic. And the more traffic you have, like the more that people will continue to shop there. Because if you lose them to, because they have to go to the store to get, you know, a loaf of bread, while they're there, maybe they'll just pick up a gallon of milk. Yeah. And you know what? By the milk, the eggs are the next aisle over, just pick up some egg. And it's those little things that I really started to empathize with. And I said, you know, yeah, this is a lot of work, but we can do it. You know, we're having fun. We were having fun. You know, it's a rush when you have a nice line at a market and you're, you know, everyone's super happy and weather's nice, which is unfortunately not often enough because we don't get great weather in Maryland. It's always kind of weird over here. But I really started to empathize with, you know, like the plight of my fellow vendors, right? And like how much everyone, even though they ran their own businesses, was really codependent. And it really kind of like hooked me in to make me realize, like, I don't want to just do this as like a fad. I really want to commit to doing this. I want to get better at the craft. I want to be a reason why people come to this market. I want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to promote and support these local farmers, because some of them are in my county, some of them are the county over, some of them are just, you know, a short drive away, but you know, this is their livelihood. And if the small sacrifice I have to make of, you know, working what is now full-time second job as a baker to help make sure that this market stays strong for as long as I can muster it, it felt like the right thing. And now that things are going well and we kind of have systems in place and we have staff and we have teams and we have like this like growing, you know, support system around us, it doesn't feel like a burden anymore. It feels like a privilege, which is like this weird, at some point it tips into this other thing where, you know, where I no longer feel the weight of like, how am I going to make good bread this week? It's, we're going to make great bread this week. How can I make sure that I am giving my staff like a reasonable work schedule and not just crushing them with like, you know, we're going to run a 16-hour day. Like, no,
yeah,
going to run a 16-hour day. That's horrible. Like, how can I minimize the amount of hours my wife needs to wake up to help me bag product in the morning? Like, how can I find these ways to kind of like extend grace and gratitude to everyone that's been so helpful in us getting to where we are and still make sure all of our customers are happy?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like being accepted into this community of food producers, you know, for the, and a small but vital community that really had an appeal for you. Like it got it, you know? Yeah.
It's what I would like, I would almost describe it as, you know, how some people are like called to like the sea, right? And Annapolis is a big sailing town. We, you know, we're right on the Chesapeake Bay and leads out to the ocean. So we're a big sailing community. There's a lot of people that are just like, they're drawn to the water, right? There's almost like this like ancestral calling, like that lures them back. And I think for me, at least personally, there was this calling to try to feed and nourish people the way that I thought they deserve to be fed, right? Not have to settle for, well, bread at the store has 27 ingredients in it. That's what bread is right now. Yeah. Bread is three ingredients, and we're gonna do our best to make it the best three that we can.
Absolutely. So do you see yourself as this is the role you're gonna transition into, or do you see yourself, I'm always gonna be doing two jobs, or?
I have no idea, I think is the short answer to that one. I've dreamt and daydreamt for more hours than I probably should have of just leaving the corporate world behind. It's very appealing to dream of that. The security blanket of that paycheck every 2 weeks is quite hard to separate from. But, you know, we recently went through a very close call to like actually making the big jump. And, you know, the story on that one is, you know, there's a development that was going in. It's actually like within eyesight of where our farmer's market is. Like you can see like the floors being
built, wow, yeah,
5 or 6 floors of, you know, like high-end apartment residential. And then there's going to be these 2 pad sites in front of that, like in this new development. And one of them was zoned for restaurant retail. And I looked at the pad site and I looked at the location and I, you know, I just started getting like the demographic data from the county. And I was like, yeah, just walk me through it. Like, and we started looking at it. We started looking at it really seriously. Got to the point that we were actually contacting, in the States, we have like this, the Small Business Administration has these loan broker people,
right. Yep.
That kind of help facilitate and kind of help with the underwriting of your loan. And I'm going to go ahead and say it. I blame episode 172 of the Rise Up podcast, farming on rented land, or don't farm on rented land. Cause I must've listened to that like a whole dozen times before this site ever became available. And every time my wife were, you know, going out for dinner, just going anywhere, you know, we'd see like a for sale or for lease sign. We'd always, you know, think about it, but we always thought that there was so much risk in a lease because we've heard so many horror stories from so many people. You know, you're in this lease, the AC goes out. You're in this lease and the landlord raises your rent. You're in this lease and they don't want to renew, right?
Right.
And like all these horror stories, we're like, yeah, no, we got to, we have to do what McDonald's figured out years ago. We need to own the land. We'll be landlords. We'll rent to ourselves. And if there's enough space, we'll rent to someone else too.
Right.
Be kinder. And because we want to be empathetic as well. And so we were looking at this property and, you know, all of this was starting to actually kind of form. We're kind of like in the early phases of underwriting and, you know, we're kind of talking through the business plan with the underwriter and he takes a look at it and he says, so you're going to put stuff on the bread? Well, yeah, of course we're going to put stuff on bread. Who doesn't put stuff on bread? You know? Put eggs, put avocado, peanut butter and jelly. Like
yeah.
People put stuff on bread. I don't feel like this is a new concept. And he's like, yeah, that's going to be tough. And apparently in the world of underwriting, for those who don't dabble in banking on their spare time, the big thing that the banks were looking at was the risk of we didn't have documented business experience with making sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches.
Yeah, running right? Like a restaurant or quick service as opposed to
right?
A bakery.
Or even just like a full service bakery cafe kind
yeah.
of, right? Where
yeah.
You know, we talked, you know, in our business plan, we were talking like coffee. And I'm like, ooh, you don't have experience with coffee. I'm like, trust me, I drink a gallon of it a day. I have lots of experience with coffee. And he's like, no, but you don't have business experience with coffee. And that was... That took our equity buy-in on this project from 10% to 15%. And he's like, in reality, it could very easily be a 20% equity buy-in. And at that point, you know, we went from 10% was going to be a stretch, but we were pretty sure we could get there, right? Like
right.
We thought we could come up with that. We were going to liquidate a whole lot of stuff, but we thought we could get there. 15% started to make me really like swallow hard. And that 20%, you know, I recognized that I was sitting at a table full of high rollers at the casino and it was too rich for my blood. And I just
kind of said,
thanks everybody. This has been fun. I'm out. And I walked away and, you know, I had, you know, you have your feelings about that, right? Like,
sure,
you get your hopes up. You start dreaming of like like, this is like goofy dreams, but like, oh man, how awesome is it going to be to like serve all my customers like a pan of chocolat, like fresh out of the oven, right? Pour them a cup of coffee, sit down, catch up with them. Like the loaves will be coming out of the oven. People will be smiling, like this, like very romantic notion of what a bakery is, which, you know, when I go to my friend's bakeries, that's actually what it looks like. So I'm very like, I was like, this could be my reality. This is going to be awesome. And when, you know, you have to kind of like close the chapter on that, you know, I was really kind of like down for a little bit, you know, a full week of just like, really just like, yeah, what are we going to do? Like, we're going to be stuck in our basement forever. Like, we're never going to get out of here. And while I'm like sitting there, like having a pity party for myself, I also realized that, you know, I was feeding my daughter dinner, right? She's 14 months old. I needed to go turn a dough. Yeah. You know, I had a stretch and fold that I had to get. You know,
20 steps. Downstairs.
And I literally, you know, like picked her up, put her in her little pack and play downstairs, wash my hands, stretch and fold the dough. Pick the baby back upstairs, and we're back to, you know, eating dinner. And I think it was somewhere in there that I was like, huh, I built a stay-at-home bakery that gives me this beautiful work-life balance in a weird way, right? Like the bakery is work and my personal life, where, you know, I can be there to put my daughter to bed. And then once she's in bed, I can go down and I can divide and shape dough, right? Like I can go sheet out, you know, pastry. I can go prep for tomorrow. I have the baby monitor with me, and I have this wonderful opportunity to be the parent that I want to be, to be the baker I strive to be, put extra income into the family, you know, budget.
Yeah.
And really feel connected to my community in a meaningful way. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I actually need to spend $5 million of other people's money on loans to have this dream. And I think I actually have it pretty awesome right now. And, you know, it really made me double down on the appreciation that I think I had been overlooking, because of, it's really easy to see the grasses of your neighbors and say, that's so much greener. And to take stock in, yeah, I may, you know, lament the fact that every time I get a flour delivery, I have to carry 2,500 pounds of flour down a flight of stairs. It's not the most fun day of the month. But when all is said and done, I have something that is super unique and gives me this amazing flexibility that I'm sure plenty of other folks would be very thrilled to have. And I should be thankful for what I have. And it really gave me a very unique perspective of.
Well, and even the perspective of, it's like, okay, this is 3 years in on the journey from saying I'm going professional.
That's how it's we like, consider it. Because before that, door stops.
Okay, so I went pro, right? And it's like, well, you know, your little ones in middle school, that's, think of the experience you will have by that point. Yes. And not experience in the craft, all the things you've gone through with the business side of things and what works and what doesn't and your customers and how that's changed and how much you can embed with the other purveyors around town or whatever. Like the number I really think like with the right mindset saying, okay, I have this machine down in my basement here. How many different ways can I use this machine? Then, you know, who knows where you'll be in 7 years' time, right? And it's like, great, you know, like it's like that's not the only pad in a decent location that's going to be built in Annapolis in the next 7 years, right? You know, and so
I hope it's
okay to say I don't know. When you first shared that story with me, my first response was, it's like, yeah, you close the chapter for now. you know, right. It was no for now, but it's like, who knows? And your attitudes could change, like in 7 years time could be, that's the last thing I want to do is deal with coffee. Cripes. You know, like, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
On the other hand, I was out for a walk this morning and I stopped and bought a coffee because I'm out of beans and I paid $4 for a drip coffee. And it was like, I think maybe there's something in this.
Yeah.
Cause we might say that, sourdough bread's addictive. It's not like coffee's addictive, I'll tell you. Because it's like I paid the money and I enjoyed it.
Right? I've always been so amazed. Like, I remember when we were trying to figure out how to price a loaf of bread for the first time. And, you know, I came up with the number of $8. Eight whole dollars for a 900-gram divide weight. Because everyone here is a baker, right? 900 gram loaf, right? I was like, it feels like it's too much. And while I was doing this, I think I was drinking like a $4 Starbucks coffee. Yeah. And I was like, this took like 30 seconds for someone to make. This is going to take me 72 hours. Like, I feel like maybe $8 is there.
Well, not only that, it's like, there's only so many that get on my truck, right? Yeah. Like, I only have... And I understand, like, and I've talked with folks and you have too, like, they're, we need to figure out ways to bake bread at a more, so we can feed more people and not every, the number of people that can afford $8 loaves is finite. And I want to feed the folks that can't afford the $8 loaves sometimes. It's like, yeah, I get it. And yet, you know,
I have a solution to that.
The way we're set up, we got to pay the bill. Like, we also have to pay the bills, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually came up with a solution to how to feed all those people who can't afford an $8 loaf of bread. And I'm just going to share it openly.
Yeah, yeah.
You just give it away.
Yeah.
So we do that.
Oh yeah.
At least once a month, we do what we call a community bake. And we bake 40, 50, 100 loaves of bread, whatever the food bank needs or tells us, like at whatever site we're going to, we just bake it fresh for them. We're not giving them seconds. We're not giving them day old.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just bring it to the site and we give it to the people who need it. And I would rather spend my time, my materials, my utilities, my energy to do that, because we almost have like everything's a battery, right? Like we have an emotional reserve battery, we have like an energy battery. We're essentially batteries. Your battery could be solo, but the love that you get from the people who have never had a fresh loaf of bread baked for them, right? Something that's honest and true, good ingredients. The love that they give you fills those batteries up instantly. Right. And the love that you get from them, where they're just, you know, this bread is still warm. Like, this is for me. Right. And like, it's humbling in a way, because like it shakes me to my core to think that there are people who need that bread, who need that good nutrition just to be able to get through their day. Right. Just to, you know, help feed their families in a way that they want to. Right. When they're short on funds, that's something that we as bakers are in this really unique position where we just give it away. And so at least once a month we do that. And we started doing that just because like I needed that. I wanted to feel a level of connection to my community. And so instead of spending money on Google ads or Facebook ads or any of those things, it's like, forget it. My marketing budget is giving I'm going to spend my entire marketing budget on giving away free bread. This is the worst marketing idea ever. Inadvertently, what I didn't take into consideration is that the volunteers who staff those also eat bread.
Yeah.
And they tell their families and they tell their friends and they tell their you know, a lot of places we give away bread are like churches and like religious organizations. Because they always have like food pantries. They tell their you know, parishioners or their you know, fellow worshipers, like, you're not gonna believe this, but there's this crazy baker with a bakery in his basement. He showed up with like 50 loaves of bread on a Tuesday morning, dropped them all off, and you know, like, the bread was still warm, it was still like steaming, like fresh out of the oven. They showed up to the farmer's market and all bought bread. Yeah. I was like, well, that was not the intention here. Like, I wasn't trying to guilt anyone to buying bread. We just wanted to do something for the community. And so giving away bread.
But there are people in the world that want to support folks that are doing good in the community. And so there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
It just so happened. And then they got their hands in the bread, thought it was the greatest thing. And that's actually enabled us to continue this forward. And so we would occasionally like kind of talk about this with some of our customers, and they thought it was the greatest thing. They're like, so wonderful, you're giving away bread, here's a donation to help with your costs. I was like, oh, okay. And so what we ended up doing was, we have what we call our buy a slice program. So if you're buying a loaf of bread for yourself, if you want to, we don't put up signs. We don't like have it on like an iPad, like with, you know, like a mandatory tip thing. Like,
oh, right. Yeah.
Right. Like everything done. No, it's if you know us and you know, and you're ordering from us and you follow us on the social media, you'll see like periodic, we'll talk about it, but we don't pressure. We never ask anyone for it. And we have customers who regularly give, you know, $2, $3, $10 to help buy a slice for the community, which is just like the nicest act of kindness. Like, they don't even get the joy of getting the love from the community that's getting fed. We, you know, I feel guilty that we get all that ourselves, but it's that's giving bread away is to the people who need it turns out to be the best way to get it out to them. Giving selflessly to the point that you can afford to, right? And we can't do it every week. I would love to, but like, we can't afford to do it every week. But that one of our goals is to just keep growing that. And, you know, last year, I think we came darn close to 1,000 loaves for the year.
Yeah,
just, wow. Which for us is huge, right? Yeah. And I'm sure there are other figures out there that are like, 1,000 loaves, we do that every week. But for us to give away 1,000 loaves over the course of a year, coming real close to that was kind of this wonderful moment. And like, our goal for this year is like, let's see if we can break 1,000. Let's keep pushing ourselves to be generous.
Right on. Yeah. So I'm going to get nasty emails if I don't ask you more of a technical question about the basement.
Yeah.
And so where you're living, what limits do you have? Like, is there sort of a, okay, this is how big we can get, or this is what's going to define your ceiling?
So when we first started baking, we actually found out that our county didn't have an ordinance that allowed us to operate a cottage food business. When we found that out, we found it out through the planning and zoning folks who, I don't want to say kind of like sarcastically or surly, but you know, like,
yeah, you're doing non-traditional things.
Employees are jaded employees. They exist everywhere. And you know, when they told us, yeah, there's no ordinance that allows you to do this, so you can, I was like, well, how do we get that? How do we fix that? Is there like, you know, grandfathering or something like that, or like someone we could like write a letter to? And they're like, you need to get an ordinance passed to change that, and good luck with that. And it was like, as soon as they said that, I was like, oh, that was a mistake. You just sent me on a warpath. So our first year of baking, before we had even finished selling, you know, our first 100 loaves, I was reaching out to our county council and our county executive, and we got an ordinance sponsored and adopted that year. And then that sent me on a path. I was like, well, that was fun. I wonder what else we could do. So the next year, one of our customers was the chief of staff for a representative of our state house, right? Our House of Delegates.
Yeah.
It's like one of our governmental bodies here that passes legislation. She was a regular customer, and she was like, you know, we should talk to the delegate about, you know, what you're doing with cottage food, because you're doing great stuff. And so set up a meeting. Next thing you know, we're getting a bill sponsored to raise the cottage food limits in the state of Maryland. And the first year, we had no idea what we were doing. I don't pretend to understand the legislature. I remember a Schoolhouse Rock video from life. I was like, just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill, something, something, something. Right. And so
I know what exactly what you're talking about, though, because I had cable TV as a kid. So, yeah, we had all the American channels. Yeah.
That was the extent of my understanding of like government. And so like I just assumed that the cartoon bill sits on the Capitol steps and eventually something happens, montage becomes law, right? Turns out that's not the case. Did not get anything past our first year, but we went back the second year, ended up picking up 21 co-sponsors in the House of Delegates, got it, figured out that we had to like, you know, make our connections in like the subcommittee for health and like governmental services. And like we started like contacting them and they were like actually very receptive to talk to us, which was weird because like we're not lobbyists. We're just like, it was me and a couple other bakers. Like we just like started calling them and one thing led to another. They actually got it voted on. And once we got it voted on, we got it to the full House of Delegates and we got a unanimous vote in the House of Delegates. And they were like, great, we got it. And they're like, no, it has to go to the Senate now. Like, I really should have paid attention to the cartoons. So we got it over to the Senate and then, you know, we started the whole thing again. And sure enough, we got a bunch of really supportive senators who were just like, yeah, this makes all the sense in the world. And so we got them to vote on. We got a unanimous vote there. I got invited to a bill sign with Governor Hogan, who's the state governor. And like, you know, I put a suit and tie. I have a commemorative pen in my desk. Actually.
No kidding.
Yeah. Like you can't make this up. I have my commemorative pen from the bill signing. I'll hold it up to the camera. This is from Larry Hogan. It's one of his like commemorative pens. This is the pen he used to sign House Bill 178 last session. And it was crazy because like I did not want to be, I don't pretend to understand how politics work. I think politics are kind of like not our thing. We just want to bake bread, but you know, we saw this opportunity to really help raise the bar for everyone and like be part of the tide that would kind of help raise all boats. So we were able to help raise the cap on cottage foods in the process. And again, because it's a super small world, I ended up making friends with another kind of like advocacy nonprofit like leader, you know, and he was really focused on like, you know, value-added products for farming. We had great conversations. Fast forward to this year, he just got appointed as the Secretary of Agriculture in the state of Maryland. Hi, Secretary Addix. How are you, sir? And so, right, like it's just been this like accidental falling forward of like Tom shows up with a coffee someplace and makes a random conversation. And next thing you know, I now was able to, you know, reach out to the Secretary of Agriculture and say, like, hey, is there any stuff that we could partner with the Department of Agriculture with to like help promote like, you know, Maryland grown products and like farmers markets? And you know, he's like, yeah, I'm going to have my people get in touch with you. We'll get in touch. We'll figure something out this year. Great. I'm just a weird guy with a bakery in my basement. Don't mind.
Don't sell yourself short though, because like, so I got to know, like, where's this come from in you that it's like, because there are so many people that at the first hurdle would say, screw it then. And I'm just going back to work or the system. And that's the end of it. Or just like, I'm going incognito and I'm going to put like a fake hedge in front of the door so nobody can see what I'm doing.
So you're so right about that, because there were people literally at our farmers market who are in our county who were baking under cottage food laws. Who, when we first raised, like, hey, did you know that technically we're not operating within like zoning ordinances?
Yeah.
Their reaction was literally like, don't say anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to get us thrown out of here.
Yeah.
Just shut up. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. You know, I think part of it is a little bit of like, if you tell me I can't do something, you're challenging me to find a way to do it well and to do it at a level that you would think I was like an expert at. So I now can explain the regulatory process in the state of Maryland in a level of detail that horrifies me, because I don't want to know that. But you know, I don't want to make this sound too noble, but I just always felt like this is what a representative government should look like, right? Where if like you have a legitimate concern, you should be able to talk to your elected representatives, whether you voted for them or not, and just kind of like have that conversation and say, hey, this is impacting me. Is there a way that we can do something that won't hurt other businesses, that won't hurt, you know, people that aren't affected, that aren't currently impacted by this, and make something better for everyone? Because if it just benefits us, yeah, we're probably in the wrong. Like, we probably should check ourselves and what we're doing. But, you know, is it wrong for a new parent to be able to stay home and make some cookies? Like, no, of course not. Like, that's common. Like, if they want to make some cookies to help bring in some income or just keep from being bored, yeah, let them make some cookies. And if you're making cookies and you're doing a decent job of it and you can make some more money, well, yeah, that's a good thing. And, you know, one of the things that I was really concerned about was, you know, is this going to be viewed as just like our personal crusade? And I didn't want it to be that. And it turns out we are such not a blip on any of the other bakeries' radars that, you know, it was one of those things where like, yeah, who are you again? What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you take the sum total of all independent bakeries, cottage or not, and that's just a blip on the whole.
On a supermarket shelf, right?
Yeah.
Right, and a supermarket will put more bread out and throw more bread away in a week than all of us collectively in this.
It's a rounding error on Bimbo's revenues, you know. Well, I'm just so glad you shared that story, because it's like, you're right. That's what the government should be about. And also the, you know, it's like you've got the people that make the decisions are coming to your stall, which never hurts, not from a, and I don't mean that from an influence way, but it's like, oh, it's nice to have elective representatives that like good food. And, you know, it's a win-win. It's not like, oh, I'm going to leverage my friendship here. This is how it should work.
I'm not going to buy my way to making a campaign donation for, you know, some rubber chicken dinner. We're doing things that, you know, hopefully resonate with everyone, that care about the local food, local economy, the local agriculture, all the good stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And they look at this and like, yeah, this is it. It was weird because a lot of legislators were like, yeah, this feels really good. Like, this is a feel good bill all day long. And I was like, wait, aren't all the, like, there's a lot of bills in line before. Like, are those not feel good bills? Anyway, but they were, you know, everyone was really supportive, from like our local county folks to the state folks, you know, all the way up through the governor's office where, you know, we had this. And that's not to say we didn't receive pushback. We have been ruthlessly, I don't want to say harassed, but our health department has found unique and interesting ways to make our lives complicated, from trolling our social media. Yeah. So, short story here. We in Maryland, you can apply to take your cottage food business and sell it in certain retail stores.
Okay.
You have to apply to the State Department of Health. They issue you and they review your product list. They review a couple things. You know, it's really just like a paperwork process. Like, send us a copy of your label, safe surf certificate, where do you want to sell it, your information. It seems like a very rote form.
Right.
So we submitted that to sell our country style sourdough bread, which its ingredients are flour, water, and salt. 14 weeks later, I got a 3-page typewritten letter with all the issues that they had. They went back through our social media and they said, yeah, the mill that you were using back in 20 whatever, they no longer have a valid milling license because we shut them down on Friday. I was like, wait, what? You shut our mill down on Friday? Like, they put us through the ringer, and a lot of this was happening while we were trying to advance legislation.
Wow.
And so it's not always been a smooth road. I don't want anyone to like think like, oh yeah, legislation's easy and fun. We had very contentious meetings with them when we were trying to advance legislation. You know, they were coming out with ridiculous counterpoints saying that, you know, cottage bakers will end up resulting in, you know, millions of allergy incidents, and allergy incidents could kill people, and cottage bakers will kill people. Cottage bakers are going to go down for murder. And I was like, whoa, we just made some wild jumps here. And so, you know, we had to really refocus on who are we doing this for, right? We're doing this for our customers. We're doing this because if we can make more revenue, then we can also donate. We can improve the access to food to people in our community, and we can really continue to grow our business so that we could bring on employees, so we could try to be the business we want to be, and not just be, you know, ruthless profit, you know, makers.
Yeah, like, but even with that, it's like if I'm the health department, I can take the posture of, I'm going to help you make safer food. I'm going to give you through guidance and stuff, and, you know, like showing, you know, there's nothing in the tour that you gave me that looked anything different than a commercial bakery, except that it was cleaner, you know, you know, I mean, like, honestly, you know, and so, you know, it's like, you take the tour. It's like, oh, here's somebody that is trying to make safe food, so I can be a guide. But if you're like, oh, the people, you know, people by nature are gonna circumvent the rules and try and get away with stuff or whatever, well, then, you know, you can't do anything. Like, yeah. And so that's unfortunate. It's been a challenge for sure for lots of folks. Yeah.
And so, like, to that point, we literally every year in this one, I've reached out to our local county health department, and I've invited them to come and inspect us, because there is no, for cottage bakeries, there's no inspection process in the laws or regulations. And I'm like, I am welcoming you into my home. Tell me, inspect me. Tell me what I could do to make our processes safer. Like here's a asset that I wrote for no reason other than I like saw this thing online, and like I want to make sure like I have hazard control. Like, tell me, like, from your professional view, how can I make this product better, safer, consistently, so that it is up to the highest? Like, I don't want to meet like the minimum threshold. Like, I want to produce this at a level that I'm proud of, that everyone could be proud of, right? Like, and every year they laugh and they think, no, we're not coming to check you out. And I'm like, all right, well, we'll talk in a year.
So then everything that you put in, all the permits and stuff, that was pure building codes kind of stuff.
Building code.
Or fire and safety, maybe. Yeah.
Building code, then electrical, then plumbing, then HVAC, then more HVAC.
Yeah.
Then a lot more HVAC. HVAC led to sprinklers. Fire marshal came out. And then we had a whole discussion of whether or not the walk-in refrigerator could ever freeze, and whether or not the code interpretation needed a sprinkler head in there. Long story short, we put one in just because, like, if you have concerns, we'll go extra.
Wow, eh?
Put an extra sprinkler head in, guys. And they're like, we don't think we need to. I'm like, yeah, but need to and can. Is it better if we do? And they're like, yeah, do it. Right? Like, yeah. In the long run, right? You know, and I've tried to take this perspective whenever I can. If you're just trying to get by with the minimum, you're gonna see that in the long run, right? Whether it's, you know, minimum code requirements for construction, or minimum pay for your employees. Like, we started our first baker at $15 an hour, which is still not a place where I'd want to be, but she started earning paid time off her first day here, that she can use at her discretion. And then she was pregnant when she came to us, and she now has a beautiful young baby boy. And so when she comes over, we offer free daycare. So she gets free on-site daycare as part of her benefits package. So she can, you know, and it's right up, right? Like, and so we have a nanny. Nanny comes, nanny takes care of the babies, right? And yep. She gets to bake. She gets to earn some income. Her kids right upstairs if she needs to go. And right, like, we want to keep doing more like that, right? Yeah. Like, we're working on setting up a 401k for them. And it's wild, right? Because, like, I guess the perspective is, like, don't get by with what you can. Get by with what feels right, right? And, like, right.
You're really pushing boundaries with being as small as you are, trying to put all those things in. And good on you for doing it. I think based on my own experience, it's like every time you're going to go to anyone official to get something like that built, they're going to go, who are you and what are you doing? And you're trying to set this up for one person. And, you know, we were trying to do supplementary health insurance with five full-time employees. And it was just like trying to work the math, and it was the lowest, you know, the plans I was looking at, like, we were like the lowest, you know, only and the lowest tier all the time, trying to figure it out and stuff is, and I look at what you're doing as being, well, kind of like we were, like, so smaller than we were, you know, at our peak, but trying to do all the things that punch above your weight in terms of being good. Yeah.
And on that one, we same, right? Like, trying to find help. So one of our neighbors actually just opened up a direct primary care, kind of like almost like a little concierge medicine practice.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And so we're going to be working with him to offer health insurance.
Yeah.
To, again, our part-time employees, just because what I kind of am seeing is the more we take care of the people that are working with us, the more they become like family, the more they become a team, and the more that they're now emotionally, personally, like, invested in, like, doing it right, right? Like, going above and beyond, just, hey, what do we need to do to get the bread out this week? What, like, here's some fun specials I think we can try that would get the customers interested. Hey, I'm going to help you write content for a newsletter, right? Like, they continue to go above and beyond for us. And it feels like we almost have this unspoken promise that we need to do everything in our power to kind of keep giving to them as much as we can.
Yeah. I was thinking about that in a similar context just yesterday about this idea of enrollment, right? And it sounds like you've got with your one employee right now, someone that's enrolled in the journey that you're on here.
Yeah.
And it's like, so what can you do to keep that going, to make it so they can stay enrolled, right? Like, that's the thing.
Because, I mean, how much time would it, how much time and stress and heartache and personal sweat equity would I need to put back in if, like, our lead baker left tomorrow because she couldn't juggle being a parent and a baker, right?
Yeah.
And I look at that and I say, well, shoot, like, that's a no brainer. Like, keep her happy, right? Like, make it work for her to keep working here. That way she sees an opportunity to continue with us, to grow with us. And she's referring other bakers to us. And we are trying to get them on board too, because, you know, we do more than just one market. And you know, there's no reason not to kind of expand in ways that make sense for a team, and giving them the input to say, hey, what do you guys think of picking up a Saturday market or picking up a second Sunday market or a third Sunday market? Well, yeah, we have a second Sunday market, which is a lot of work as it is, but, like, what can we do to grow in ways that feel good for everyone? And, you know, the numbers are there, right? Like, could we make more money and more profit line? Sure. But I don't think that's the end goal, right? For us at least. Yeah. That's not the same for everyone, but it doesn't feel like that's what our true goal is. Like we're doing everything we want to do. So let's keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, and there's physical constraints here, right? Like there's, if your vision goes beyond what you can do by yourself, then you got to buy into the model that you're talking about. And I guess that's the thing. If you're stuck in the middle saying, well, I need, or I want, or I aspire to a level that is more than I can pull off by myself, but I'm resistant to enrolling employees and connecting with, I don't want to spend time with all of that stuff. I don't know. You can't connect those two things in my mind. You're stuck in that no man's land.
So we've had like business mentors over the years. There's a lot of great free resources out there. Are just out there to like help coach and counsel you. And like the first thing they say when they hear our story is like, oh, okay, so you're trying to figure out if you can hire. I'm like, oh no, we're good. We got staff. I have some staff that I don't have space for right now. And I'm just trying to see if we can fit them into a schedule down the road, maybe. And they kind of look at you like, wait, you made that jump. And I'm like, well, yeah, you have to, right? Like, because at some point you want to take a day off. You want to have a weekend to yourself. And our goal for this year is like, we want to be able to take a weekend off and actually have the bread go to the market without us. And that's our big goal for year three.
Yep.
Right. Like, and I'll be honest, I think it's going to happen. I fact check me at the end of the season, but everything is on that trajectory right now. We had a mix the other day. And it was the most surreal thing. We were doing a big, we made these Hamantaschen cookies it's a traditional Jewish stuffed cookie with like some jam in it, for Purim. I'm probably butchering this. But we partnered with our jam friend from the market, Kim. If you're in the Maryland area, her business is Fructose and Spice, and you should absolutely get her jam. And so we partnered with her. She supplied the jam. We set up like an assembly line in the basement. We kind of made these cookies. That day, we were also making bread. I think I started a couple mixes, got them up to the point where they were auto-leasing. And then I think I might have shaped like 16 loaves while everyone else was like kind of cycling through lunches. But yet all the bread made it to the market, right? Like all the bread got into baskets, got into the walk-in. And it was a surreal moment because I was like, I was working on all these ancillary things and the team has now gotten to the point that they're at a place where they can just execute and they can work together. They communicate well. And I was like, and I stopped at the end of the day, like, this is the least amount of bread I have shaped since we started. This is surreal. And so getting to see the maturity of that and really see them kind of gel as part of this has really just been this wonderful experience of like, wow, this is happening. Cause that allowed us to do this Hamantaschen cookie thing. And at the end of it, we donated all the profits to World Central Kitchen.
Yeah.
Because Jose Andres is an amazing human being. We put a $700 check out to World Central Kitchen from selling these cookies. Right. And that felt awesome. Like that feels good to this for the soul. And it was like, yeah, this is what I want our bakery to be. Like, it doesn't need to be this picturesque, you know, wonderful, you know, place with a couple little round tables and people. And I love that. And I love going to all my friends. I love seeing their bakeries. I dream of that. But like where we are, our bakery is almost like this community giving center in a way. And that feels pretty awesome too. So.
Right on. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got a good bit of contentment to go along with the heck of a lot of work that you're doing. And so I appreciate you taking the time, man. Thanks for chatting. This has been great.
This is going to be probably the only episode that I don't listen to because I think my part of like what I've done for since we started. I've gone back, I've listened to the entire catalog, like literally episode one. Like I've heard the family episodes where you're like, you're retelling stories from like the holidays.
Yeah.
All the bakers that I look up to have been interviewed. I've listened to their episodes. I listened to this episode. I listened to this for like inspiration and like that almost sense of community and solidarity, right? Because I know when I'm working on the bench alone in the wee hours or whatever hour I'm doing something, I'm listening to this and I'm hearing, you know, another baker telling their story. And I just find all these like tidbits of inspiration and aspiration and drive. And it's always been so refreshing. And now I'm really sad because I'm going to have a week where I have nothing to listen to because I cannot stand the sound of my own voice. And I just will cringe for the entire period of time.
I'm right with you. I understand completely. Two things to keep in mind. First, you can just set it to play at 1.5 times speed. So it's two chipmunks talking.
Brilliant.
It does a lot of good for me because I can't handle my own voice either. And then the other one is when you are feeling down, come back and listen to this, because what you're describing, both the ups and the downs, they're always ending with an up.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful we had this chat because we can go and share this now and folks can find their bit of inspiration from what you're doing. Cause I think there's a lot here to inspire folks. So thanks for doing it, man.
Mark, this has truly been a pleasure.
That was a lot of fun. You know, I knew snippets of a lot of these stories because Tom, like I say, has been an active member of Bakers for Bakers for quite a while now. And has been a really good contributor on calls and that kind of a thing and contributor in the forums. But I only really got snippets of the stories before we had this conversation. And it was so nice to hear the whole thing. I'll tell you, the way that he tackled some problems around getting cottage bakers legitimized in Maryland and in his county and in his state is pretty remarkable. And like a lot of chutzpah in that guy to like kind of let's push and let's get this done and let's get recognized for what we do and let's get some supports in place. And that's pretty cool. You know, and when he was talking about the challenges of dealing with, you know, this idea of maybe I should expand and maybe I should build my own place and that kind of a thing, like that can be pretty overwhelming. And I think he kind of dove into it with both feet and worked it out and then realized, you know, when this is getting too rich for my blood, takes a step back. There's nothing wrong with that. The joy in this and the good news in this is to be able to sit there and say very kind of lucidly and critically, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm trying to build, but I've got a limit of what I can invest in this. And if I can't make it work, well, then I'm going to regroup and I'll try again later. So, you know, good on him for that. I was really grateful that he was open to sharing his story. The good stuff and the great stuff and the stuff that didn't work so well with me. And so then we could share it together to all of you. So hope you enjoyed this conversation. I had a great time pulling it together for you. Until our next meeting, when we get together again with another conversation with another baker, have a great week. Work hard, bake lots, keep making the good stuff. Stay healthy and safe as well, okay? Get some sleep if you have to. Happy baking. Bye-bye.